Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
I want you to know that the mothership has landed.
It's DA on CBS Sports Radio.
What's up, my brother? I want permission to come aboard the mothership.
Asking permission to join a sports talk spaceship? Well, we're all a little crazy. The mothership has connected.
The mothership.
Let's come aboard.
Happy Tuesday to you, North America. The mothership has connected. Welcome aboard. It's the 3-hour Space Station Social. DA with you from the CBS Sports Radio studios in New York City, broadcasting to affiliates nationwide and north of the border. Anchorage to Atlanta, Seattle to St. Pete, Kalamazoo, and Waterloo. We are on the air.
Hey, listening, DA. Everything we saying, DA. Everything.
And we come to you live from the Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loan studio. Rocket Mortgage with you every step of the way to provide a seamless mortgage experience. How's everybody doing this morning? Thanks so much for joining us. Tis a Trash Tuesday. And so let us know who or what you're trashing. Simply dial me up on the toll-free line to let me know who's aggravating you, what's bugging you, the pebble in your shoe, the burr under your saddle. Here is your phone number, 855-212-4CBS. That's 855-212-4227. And use that all morning long for any of your thoughts on the topics that we'll get into. And your football weekend recap from the college game, what you're fired up about, what you're steaming on coming up here in the NFL week number one. Also, of course, hit me up on Twitter, DA on CBS. That's DA on CBS. We're going to talk about the Michigan Wolverines at a Jim Harbaugh crossroads. If not this year, when? Is the common refrain in Ann Arbor. Can this be the year? We'll talk to John U. Bacon, who is a longtime Michigan Wolverines scribe. He's written about the Wolverines for years. He also has written a new book about Harbaugh's first 4 years in Ann Arbor called Overtime. We'll talk to John about the Wolverines and where Harbaugh and that program sits right now in the Big Ten, coming up here in about 35 minutes from now. Also, we'll talk about Nick Saban of the Alabama Crimson Tide and where they are right now, coming off that opening day impressive victory against Duke, although I don't know how impressive it can be since it's just Duke, with Lars Anderson, who has written for Sports Illustrated for decades and also has a book about chasing the bear. Lars Anderson is going to join us coming up in hour number two. We'll get to Our Trash is coming up in hour number two as well. We'll also discuss Bill O'Brien's remake of the Texans roster and whether he is a power-hungry madman right now. He has basically no first or second round picks in two of the next three seasons and three of the last four. Also, Jarrett Stidham is your backup in New England. Is that part of a power play? And Florida State got its butt handed to it by Boise State. We'll talk about Willie Taggart's crew making excuses over the Broncos going down there and walking out with a victory. How impressive was the Broncos? All of that coming up this morning on the show. But let's start in Dallas because we finally have a contract signed. The Dallas Cowboys coming to an agreement this morning with offensive lineman Lyle Collins. Now, note that this is shortly after they came to an agreement with Jalen Smith. They've also come to an agreement with offensive linemen like Tyron Smith and Travis Frederick. They also, in the spring, came to an agreement with DeMarcus Lawrence. They have come to deals with all of these guys, and none of them include the big guys. Dak Prescott, Ezekiel Elliott, and Amari Cooper. And I got to ask this question. How do the Cowboys' books work here? Because the Cowboys are paying $20 million a season for DeMarcus Lawrence. They just signed him in April. They also laid out top three contracts, top three in the entire NFL, for three offensive linemen, Tyron Smith, Travis Frederick, and Zach Martin. They also gave Jalen Smith 5 years, $64 million, with 35 of that guaranteed. Can I ask you how it is possible that the Dallas Cowboys can give top three contracts to three-fifths of their offensive line, 35 guaranteed to a linebacker, DeMarcus Lawrence locked up at $100 million, and that they would still have money for Ezekiel Elliott, Dak Prescott, and Amari Cooper? All we keep hearing about is, well, can't be too greedy. Zeke can't get too greedy. Dak can't get too greedy. Amari can't get too greedy. Don't you want to win? Don't you want to be part of a winner? I mean, essentially, Jerry Jones and Stephen Jones built the Jalen Smith press conference to wag a finger at Ezekiel Elliott. That entire press conference was a press conference for the two Jones boys to sit up there and say, Zeke, see what Jalen did? So I got to ask this question. If they have the money to have signed three-fifths of their offensive line at top three contracts and put out the money for DeMarcus Lawrence and put out the money for Jalen Smith and now put out the money for Lyle Collins, is it just me or does the Cowboys spending seem a little questionable, at least if they're always using the bum, bum, bum salary cap as the boogeyman? It is where we begin your cold open.
Yeah, we're just focused on the guys who are here right now. And so we're going to go out and practice with the guys who have been here and prepare to play with those guys. Zeke's been a big part of our team. We love him. Once he gets back here, we'll try to get him as integrated as quickly as possible. Zeke is as capable as anybody I know. You know, he's an experienced player. He's been a really good player for us. He knows our system of football. I don't think there'll be a lot of learning there. He's a smart guy. He's an instinctive guy. We're just focused on the guys we have right now. We're going to go practice as well as we can to prepare the right way to play the Giants.
I don't believe it!
The most amazing, sensational, dramatic, heartrending.
It's DA's top story.
Here he goes!
It's your cold open.
That was Jason Garrett. I'm no capologist, okay? I'm no NFL version of Bobby Marks here. But what it smells like often in the NFL is that owners and GMs hang the boogeyman of the salary cap to get guys scared into taking the money that the owners want to spend. And sure, there are salary cap ramifications. Remember, not long ago, both Washington and Dallas had to forfeit draft picks for being, I believe, repeat offenders of the salary cap. But I just wonder, okay, let's say that the salary cap is real, the salary cap is literal, the salary cap is black and white, and there is a specific number that the Cowboys cannot go over, and that's that. Well, at some point, they're going to hit no money here with all these contracts. At some point. Once Dak gets re-upped, they're going to have to, because Dak's going to be worth $25 to $35 million a year. If that means, let's just hypothetically say Amari Cooper is a victim of it and Amari Cooper can't get his money, that means that the Cowboys just spent a first-round draft pick last year on a year and a half of Amari Cooper if he's going to get the zig after the season. I think more likely there's always creative ways to cook the books. I think there's always creative ways to get guys on your payroll, to spread out the guaranteed money, to make sure it fits however you want to make it fit. I think that's more likely than there is an actual guillotine hanging over a franchise saying, you cannot make this much money because we just can't spend it. You know, I think that many of you, many of us, including myself, probably have a monthly budget. And you know, if you go over said budget, even by a dollar, that dollar doesn't exist. That dollar just isn't anywhere. I think in the NFL, it's not like that. I think in the NFL, they go, well, yeah, we can move this around here. And if that dollar doesn't exist and we really want to go out to the movies, we can do this or this. Oh, that means that if the car breaks down this month, that's okay. We can fix this and this. And we just spend this here and do this. I think the Cowboys have been acting all along like, nope, there is $100 between all of you players. And that's the only way we do it. And you get a dollar and you get a dollar 50 and you get $2. When in reality, I don't think it's nearly that cut and dry, because the Cowboys, just on the eve of the season, just said, yeah, you know what? We'll re-sign Lyle Collins. So they've now sent two messages, salvos across the bow at Ezekiel Elliott, too. That's just the cost of doing business. We're just going to sign two big contracts just to send a message to Zeke when we've already signed another three offensive linemen and DeMarcus Lawrence. I mean, let's just put it this way. The Cowboys now have 4/5 of their offensive line signed to big extensions. 4/5. How many teams can do that? And I realize Dak is on a rookie deal, but still, I beg you this question. Does the Cowboys' fear of not having enough in the pie hold much water, this fear-mongering, if they just are willing to spend it on everybody but Zeke and Dak and Amari? 855-212-4CBS. 855-212-4227. Twitter, DA on CBS. Because what happens if Zeke would have taken the last offer from the Cowboys and Dak would have taken a $30 million a year offer from the Cowboys that were reportedly on the table? If that were to happen, was Lyle Collins not going to get paid? Well, if that's true, then why would you spend money right now on Lyle Collins knowing that eventually you're going to have to pay Dak and Zeke? It's not like you're just willing to let them go walking into the night. It's not an if, not an either or. Yeah, something doesn't quite add up here, huh? When we come back, Boise State went to Tallahassee on a business trip and came back with a business win. And FSU's making some pretty lame excuses about it. We'll discuss that coming up here next. DA, CBS Sports Radio.
Hear the 12 DAs of Christmas as they happen.
I'm 5'2". I'm a redhead and I weigh 115 pounds. Not even. I'm not dark haired. I'm red haired. And I'm very petite, and I'm a cute little wild redhead. And don't you forget that, DA.
The DA Show on CBS Sports Radio.
Hurricane Jen, I could never forget that, even though we've never met. 21 minutes past the hour, DA with you here on CBS Sports Radio. The DA Show every single morning, 9 until noon Eastern Time, 6 until 9 Pacific, and Sunday is the debut of Season 4, Sunday Morning Football. Sunday, Sunday, Sunday. Be there at 10 a.m. Eastern Time. We've moved it back 1 hour, and so now we're 10 a.m. until noon, 10 a.m. until noon Eastern Time on CBS Sports Radio and all the same places you listen to this show as we break down college football on Saturday and then react to that and preview an NFL Sunday. It returns this weekend, Sunday morning, right here on CBS Sports Radio.
I am excited.
I'm very excited. And one of the things I look forward to most every single year is Kevin Harlan's dulcet tones with a brand new Sunday Morning Football open. The script is out. Harlan has voiced it. One of the great voices in sports of all time. Every year does an amazing thing for us and voices the Sunday Morning Football Open. It's always different. It's updated every year. 100 years of NFL, 150 years of college football. We're all over it. The debut of Harlan's Open. Whew, always gives me shivers. Coming up this Sunday. By the way, the Player of the Week brought to you by Granger. Taking a look at the one who got it done. Ian Book, last night, the Notre Dame quarterback. The Irish get a victory on the opening Monday night of the season. He goes 14 of 23, a buck 93 and a touchdown. Notre Dame had a bit of a fight on its hands at 14 all, but then pulled away in the second half. Louisville was really sloppy at offense. So many botched snaps, fumbles, the wide receiver reverse that could have punched him into the end zone, which was a pretty play call from the coaching staff, which was overthrown, corner of the end zone. Louisville just, it had a game in front of them and just kept punting it away. So Notre Dame gets the win, putting their 30-3 blowout loss to the Cotton Bowl behind them. And the Player of the Week brought to you by Granger. Granger's got your back when it comes to the safety and industrial supplies that keep your facility running. Get what you need when you need it, Granger.com. I think the Brian Kelly story of not getting upset on the sidelines anymore and now being a kinder, gentler Brian Kelly story is really interesting. Because let's face it, in college football, Brian Kelly was known as the craziest, most maniacal screamer in the country. That was just what he was. Always red-faced, eyes bulging, spittle coming out of his mouth. Brian Kelly was known as the craziest maniac on the sideline out of any coach. And now all you hear is kinder, gentler, softer Brian Kelly. On the sidelines last night, Notre Dame in a 14-all game against a Louisville team that's not going to be very good. They should totally overmatch coming off of a college football playoff last year. Doesn't say anything. Just standing there, silent on the sidelines. After the game, saying Ian Book played a great game. Nothing we got to worry about here. Nothing to see here. And something happened. I think either he realized, oh, yelling at Gen Zers, yelling at 20-somethings nowadays doesn't work anymore. And you can't pull that off. You're just going to drive them away. Or number two, administration said no more of this or else you're out of here. And he really likes the job because it pays really well. And Brian Kelly wants to keep the job. Or maybe there's some internal growth. Maybe, but it's very hard to believe that at his age, being as successful as he was for all of those years, you just come to this kind of internal peace and go, oh, you know what? I'm going to say my Zen hymns right now, and I'm on the sideline of a college football game. Life is beautiful, and the universe is ever expanding, and love is everywhere. I have to imagine that's not it. But does he go to a shrink? Does he go to a therapist? Does he work out his old anger issues? Is he on a weekly basis sitting down, laying down on the couch, talking about all the things that happened in his childhood? I'd really like to know, how does Brian Kelly go from raging maniac to kinder, gentler Brian Kelly? Willie Taggart's just such a buffoon. And I, you know, frankly, it pains me to say this. I like Willie. We've had Willie on the show. I think Willie Taggart's trying to do the best thing at FSU. And that Jimbo Fisher had completely emotionally and mentally checked out of that job and left the thing broken. And now it's up to Willie Taggart to fix it, and it's not easily fixed. I really don't like to call out Willie Taggart as a buffoon. I really don't. That you might be surprised to hear that because I like to call a lot of people bozos and clowns and buffoons and morons. But not in this case. It does me no joy. But after Saturday's loss to Boise State, Willie Taggart had the audacity to blame hydration. Quote, I think after going through last weekend and seeing our guys going down and cramping, one thing we talked about with our medical staff is our guys got to hydrate. That can't be on Friday. That can't be on Thursday. They need to start hydrating early in the week and take care of their bodies. We can't leave it up to our players just to do it. We've got to force them to hydrate and take care of themselves. I don't know if we did a good job of that last weekend. One of those situations where you live and learn, and we'll make sure that we help our guys when it comes to that. It wasn't dehydration. It wasn't lack of water or Gatorade or cramping. Boise State came into your house. You're the Florida team. You're the team based in Florida with a roster primarily of guys from the state. You were the ones that needed to understand more about hydration. Meantime, Boise State, a bunch of players that practice at altitude, a lot of players from the West Coast without nearly the crazy humidity that you have in Florida. You have Boise State in the mountains, dry air, going to Florida, and they knew how to hydrate. It wasn't hydration. It was that Boise State went down there and had a mentality of, we're on a business trip, and we're coming back with a business victory. And they executed the game plan, and FSU jumped out to the 21-6 lead after the first quarter. So if anybody would be dehydrated, it would be Boise State for chasing a game that they were already down by more than two touchdowns. Instead, it was methodical. Boise State is fundamental. Boise State executed, and Boise State had a far superior quarterback performance by Hank Bachmeier. Bachmeier was great. He wasn't just good, he was great. He threw for more than 400 yards on the road against an ACC foe that just a couple of years ago was in the college football playoff. Bachmeier's the real deal. They got really good ground attack as well, more than 200 yards on the ground. And late in that game, in the second half, Boise State outscored Florida State 17-0 in the second half. That was not about hydration. That was not about who was hydrated enough with water or Gatorade or salts or whatever. This was about a team enforcing its will. This was about a team executing late in the game. This was about a team that kept its composure. This was about a team that had been in tough situations in the past and leaned on that and had a quarterback that they believe in and a coach that had been there before. Hydration, cramping, hydration, come on. With all due respect to Boise State's roster, they would swap in a heartbeat the talent level that the Florida State Seminoles have on that roster. It's not about hydration or cramping. It was about a better coach team with a better quarterback and a better game plan going on the road and coming back with a victory. Supremely impressive by Boise State, and I don't want to hear any excuses about hydration.
Come on.
By Willie Taggart and the Seminoles. Come on now. Come on now.
Come on.
855-212-4CBS. 855-212-4227. On a Trash Tuesday. Hit us on Twitter as well. DA on CBS. When we come back here on the DA show. A crossroads for Michigan. If Jim Harbaugh can't get it done this year, he ain't ever going to get it done. What's the pressure like in Ann Arbor? We'll talk to a New York Times bestselling author about it, John U. Bacon, coming up here next. Merez just got hungry. DA, CBS Sports Radio.
Hear the 12 DAs of Christmas as they happen.
I was on honor roll. Like, I wasn't Harvard bound. I was community college bound.
Right. And then the accident happened.
Come on. That's not fair.
Bitten by a spider that had just eaten a Domino's pizza.
That's not right. That's not right.
The DA Show on CBS Sports Radio.
Full episodes of The DA available on iTunes, radio.com, and at the website, cbssportsradio.com. If you missed anything or want to hear it again, And our toll-free line is 855-212-4227, brought to you by GEICO. Great news. Quick way you could save money switching to GEICO, geico.com. 15 minutes, you could save 15% or more on car insurance. We'll jump into your phone calls coming up here after the college football week number one. I know a bunch of guys want to weigh in on what you saw over the course of college football weekend number one, so we'll get to that here momentarily. First up, though, our guest has been described as the poet laureate of Michigan football. He was given unprecedented access to the Michigan football program over the course of the last year. And right now, as we all know, Jim Harbaugh has major pressure, and the Wolverines have major pressure on delivering finally on a Big Ten championship and perhaps a spot in the college football playoff. Their nemesis, Ohio State, is a brand new head coach and a brand new quarterback. That game is going to be in Ann Arbor this upcoming November. So if there's a year to do it, it would be this year. Joining us here on the show, New York Times bestselling author and author of the new book, Overtime, John U. Bacon. John, good morning.
Good morning to you, the legendary DA. I made it. I made it to the big time.
I would say that we've made it by having you here on the show, but thanks so much.
Very generous. Thank you.
For the kind words. So when you go behind the scenes with Michigan, I think one question that I certainly have, and I think a lot of people have, is Harbaugh really like that every day, every minute behind the scenes, or is that partially a caricature and an act for the public, for the cameras, for the microphones?
I would say, complicated answer, yes. Both are true. It's certainly part of who he is. I wouldn't call it a phony act by any means, but he gives so little of himself in a public press conference that you have to get behind the scenes to get more. What I did, which worked out very well, is I had sat down with Jim for 3 hours with his dad, Jack, and he loves his dad. He does a podcast with his dad, so I got 3 great hours. Got a few other short interviews along the way as well. But he let it out pretty good in this book. We've got 6 chapters that serve as biographies, and Austin Murphy of Sports Illustrated said is the best Harbologist work we've seen so far. So he's actually a lot funnier and a lot more personable than you would guess from his press conferences.
Is he, I hate to use the word tortured, but is he tortured at all about the lack of success against Urban Meyer behind the scenes?
I would say, here's another wimpy answer, D.A., yes and no. Publicly, he's handled it pretty calmly and all that, but I interviewed Sarah Harbaugh, his wife also, and she said, after you lose to Ohio State, do not share a bed with Jim Harbaugh. So, D.A., if you get that chance, pass it up. And here's why, because apparently, if you lose to Ohio State, he spends the entire bus ride home 3 hours with his head against the window, staring out into space. He gets home. When he tries to go to sleep, he starts yelling at referees and offensive coordinators and whatnot in his sleep out loud, and then starts thrashing his arms back and forth. So it's not only loud, but it's also unsafe. So I would say some of that speaks to the high engine motor we're talking about.
Well, and there's obviously the Michigan-Ohio State rivalry of which he was born into and played in. However, I think it feels like he looks at himself as good versus Urban Meyer's evil. Could there be any of that that plays into this?
Yes, it's probably a bit strong to put those words in his mouth, but it's probably not that far off, including his comment about Urban Meyer at the Big Ten Media Days when he said that his record is unprecedented. He's had a great success, but controversy has followed Urban Meyer wherever he's gone, which is largely true, although most coaches wouldn't say that. One of the chapters in the book is Hard to Beat the Cheaters, not talking about Urban Meyer or Ohio State. He did not name any coaches or programs, but he's talking about recruiting and how the cheating is rampant and Michigan's trying to do it the right way, near as I can figure, and no one cares. The NCAA is both sheriff and saloon keeper, and guess what, DA, they're better at saloon keeping than they are at sheriffing. So that's his beef on that point there. And Michigan has been top 5 academically under Harbaugh out of 130 Division I teams since he's been there. So he cares about those things quite a bit. Those aren't excuses, I don't think. He said we're accountable for our record, and which he certainly is, and he's 0-4 versus the Buckeyes. There's no spinning that. But I think he does see Michigan on a higher plane than others, and that I'm sure annoys the Michigan haters out there, of which there are plenty.
John U. Bacon joins us, author of Overtime, Jim Harbaugh and the Michigan Wolverine to the Crossroads of College Football. I want to delve into that a little bit deeper about trying to beat the cheaters, because Rashawn Gary, you were asked, I believe, or you asked him about being offered money to attend other programs and schools. He decided to attend Michigan. He liked the academics there. He liked the academic support. But how reasonable is it to believe that clean programs can beat dirty programs if there are any clean programs out there, if there's hundreds of thousands of dollars at stake for just one player?
Great question. And I do have a caveat paragraph in this book, DA, where I say, look, I can't prove a negative, as they say in logic. I can't prove, for example, that Queen Elizabeth is not in your studio right now, although I doubt it. So I've been to their homes. I've seen their cars. It seems like the same crappy stuff I had in college. So if they're taking money, they're hiding it very well. But it is possible that somebody is. But my strong impression is no. And Rashawn Gary's great line about this was when I said, look, man, the rumor around here in Schembechler Hall is that another school offered you $300,000, $100,000 a year to play for them. And he leaned back and he grinned. He said, man, it was more than that. It was more than money, and it was more than one school. And he let me use that quote on the condition that I don't name any of the schools. But how does Michigan get Rashawn Gary? Because he's dyslexic. He's diagnosed in seventh grade, and his mom got him in a dyslexia center between school and practice. So he always had to go there first before practice. Would not let him play in a game. If he got a C, he got a C once, and she benched him. So he never got a C again. He came to Michigan. He went all three semesters year-round, four classes per semester instead of three, which is the normal way to do it. So he's only a few credits shy after 3 years, and academic all Big Ten. So, but they can't get many guys like that. They get a few five-stars, but not that many. And you can't unless you're going to pay them, frankly.
So going behind the scenes with college football programs and picking around and poking around, how corrupt do you find the entire enterprise?
Almost completely.
Yeah.
I'll save you some time here, DA. I know you're a busy man. But, I mean, and you went to Syracuse. The pipeline, of course, with Trico and all the other guys. So you've been around. You've talked to all the guys and across the nation. We all hear the same stories, and they, come up to your shore unbidden. I'm not even looking for these stories, and I've heard, dozens about how they do it. The latest one I've heard pretty good is the used car trick. So you got a beat-up 15-year-old pickup truck. You drive it into the, Mercedes dealership in town, and you say, hey, I need a new part. And they say, hey, you're right. In the meantime, take the 450 SL loaner car, and we'll look for your part. And it may take, 2-3 years to track that part down. or until your knee gets blown out, one of the two.
Right. The best loaner car program any college kid
really
has ever had.
Yeah, it didn't work for me for some reason. I don't know why. But they found the part for my case. But so we all hear these stories. And the catch is that, I don't know, the NCAA clearly does not care in the defense of the teams that are, paying players or whatever. Look, the NCAA has declared itself with the FBI investigation and so on. The FBI caught guys, and the NCAA still doesn't care. So it's hard to say, why you should care exactly. But I think you're right that it's pretty rampant. I think in basketball it's far more rampant than it is in college, in football, sorry. And the reason is that LeBron James and four of us will win a lot of games, and Tom Brady cannot win you a national title by himself.
Yeah, John Eubacon joins us here on the show. New York Times bestselling author. I've been asked a lot this offseason, do you think Harbaugh's on the hot seat? I mean, if he doesn't win the Big Ten this year, do you think he's fired? And I keep saying, I think he's such a cultural fit for Michigan that they'd be hard-pressed to think that they could find a better fit even if he can't beat Ohio State again. Do you get any sense that if this is not the year for the Wolverines, somehow Wolverines brass would want to move on?
DA, tell your listeners that you are way ahead of the game. You got this one right. The national pressure is immense, obviously. The national media are all saying, do or die and so on. That's part of the title, overtime, of course. But locally, the vote is 1-0. The AD, Ward Manuel, is squarely in Jim's corner. He's not wiggling even a little bit. They get along great. And like you said, I mean, this is where Michigan arrogance can bite you in the backside. If not Harbaugh, who exactly? Are you going to find a better coach? This guy succeeded at San Diego, Stanford, the 49ers, got the team back from a 5-win season to a 10-win season in Ann Arbor. Has not beat the Buckeyes as the one big dent in the armor. But if you change horses now, man, I mean, did you not pay attention to the previous 10 years? You start the whole thing over, which is not the way to do it. So nationally, he might be in the hot seat, but locally, he's not.
Yeah, and I can imagine suddenly Michigan going, oh, yeah, we're going to fire a lifelong Michigan Wolverine guy to then get, the next hot shot offensive coordinator from a Sun Belt team. That's just not the way this thing is going to operate. And like you said, there's not many guys with a higher profile that would step in there that you would feel like you were upgrading. So it kind of feels like even if they don't, quote unquote, do it this year, he's got a pretty long leash for the next couple of seasons, right?
I think the leash is as long as he wants it to be in Ann Arbor. He's getting paid well. The team's winning 10 games most seasons. Academically, they're top five. If these things, you know, Michigan fans claim these things matter, then they should matter. I think you're right about that. What the job can become is unpleasant if you keep on losing to Ohio State. So at that point, maybe the NFL looks better. They don't have alumni in the NFL, no grades in the NFL. That's an easier job in some ways. But I think you're right. The job is his as long as he wants. It's worth noting that his parents, who lived in Milwaukee, did not move to Baltimore with John or Georgia with their son-in-law, Tom Crean. They moved to Ann Arbor on the same plot of land as the Harbaughs themselves. So you got built-in babysitters. That is not, I don't think, a temporary move.
John U. Bacon, New York Times bestselling author. This book is really cool. It's called Overtime, Jim Harbaugh and the Michigan Wolverines at the Crossroads of College Football. It's not just for Michigan fans. It's for Big Ten fans as well, because there's a lot of behind-the-scenes stuff about Northwestern, Wisconsin, Michigan State, Penn State, Ohio State, of course, as well. So check it out, Overtime, Jim Harbaugh and the Michigan Wolverines at the Crossroads of College Football. John, this was enlightening, but it was also fun. So how about we do this again here soon?
Anytime, DA. Thank you.
You got it, man. John U. Bacon joining us here on the show, the poet laureate of Michigan football. Really good stuff. I just don't see Michigan administration ever going, now, you know, we could do better than John, than Jim Harbaugh. What's going to be the better fit? Who's going to have a higher profile? If Harbaugh also, by the way, continues to not be in any type of scandal or players on academic probation, or if he keeps recruiting decent guys and they have a high academic standing, what are you going to fire him on? Just not beating Ohio State, but winning 9 or 10 games every year? It's just not going to be enough to fire him. There's going to be pressure. There is pressure, but it's not going to be enough to make a change there. I think Harbaugh is the coach at Michigan, kind of what John just said, as long as he really wants it. Now, Harbaugh has been known to change his heart on a dime and want, you know, get antsy to go do something else. But until that happens, I think Harbaugh's your guy, even if they don't beat Ohio State again this year. 855-212-4CBS. John is next up. He's in Boise, listening on 93.1 of the Ticket there. Good morning, John.
Hey, good morning, DA. Permission to board.
Granted. What's cooking?
Hey, man, so Willie Taggart, his press conference after Boise State beat them was about 15 minutes long, and I felt like he said a bunch of stuff but said nothing at the same time. He kept talking about, well, we executed and we played hard in the first half, but he would not explain what went wrong in the second half.
I think Willie Taggart is out of answers, and I think he knows how much pressure is on him right now, and I think he understands that that was an embarrassing loss. Boise State, it's a good program, but at home in that spot to be shut out 17-0 in the second half, and really in the second half watching the road team from the Mountain West impose their will on you, Willie Taggart, after an embarrassing season last year, doesn't have any answers right now. And so grasping at straws on things like, oh, dehydration, you know, somewhat embarrassing. Zeke the Greek is in Oregon, listening to 95.3 The Score. What's up, Zeke?
Well, that's about the only excuse we didn't get for our second half meltdown was hydration.
True.
But the Ducks coaching staff apparently doesn't know the rules, for one thing.
Correct.
There are two timeouts because our quarterback got a cramp. I don't know, DA. This is, I don't want Taggart back, but this is a nightmare.
Well, I wouldn't call it a nightmare yet. I mean, number one, obviously it wasn't a conference game, and so you can still win the Pac-12 despite losing, obviously, against Auburn. But there's some things there that bother you. I mean, part of the thing that's good is that Oregon had a lead in this game, was beating up on a pretty good team, and, you know, Justin Herbert's going to be just fine this year. I'm absolutely bothered, if I'm an Oregon fan, about Mario Cristobal's inability to clock manage game situations, and they called a timeout before the game even started. I mean, how does that happen? No play had been run. They suddenly were already out of sorts. The Herbert knee-to-knee situation looked worse than I guess it was, but they didn't know that a guy, if he didn't come out, he couldn't go back in. They called multiple timeouts. They didn't know what was going on. That was a mess. And then, you know, they didn't drain clock when they could have in the second half. They're running plays with 15 to 17 seconds left on the play clock with a lead. What are you doing? I know you want to get into a rhythm, but that didn't make any sense. That game, that loss, should be put on the coaches at Oregon and squarely on Cristobal. When we come back, Trash Tuesday next hour for us. And also, is Bill O'Brien a madman? DA, CBS Sports Radio.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.